When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the podcast. It's Real Talk with Zuby, with your host, myself, Zuby. Today, we've got on a special guest. This is my friend, MC Fixer, who is a live streamer and video game commentator. How's it going?
What's happening, dude? What's happening? Long time no speak. Long time no speak. I haven't seen you in IRL, in real life, for a long, long time now. Good to see you still at it, still grinding, still the music's still popping. So I love it, man.
Thank you very much, bro. It's got to be done, man. I'm always trying to do new things whilst keeping going what is already working for me. So this podcast is a brand new thing, but it's gaining some good speed already. So it's nice to have you on as one of the early guests. Let's catch up then. It's been a while. So tell me what you've been up to, man.
Yeah. I mean, when I saw you last, I probably still doing music. So I was doing music full time. I just finished college and I was doing rapping. I was a rapper. I was taking inspiration from you and Shadow, obviously. We're selling CDs up London, like the two of you. Once, do you remember when I come and met you up London once?
I remember.
I was just sort of shadowing you. And I was like, oh, this is how it's done. So I did that for about a month. And I was like, this is actually pretty good. Then the group I was with, which were called AG Fly at the time, broke up. And I was like, okay. What do I do now?
What was the reason for that?
I think it was creative differences was number one. I always say egos, which is very hard when you've got three different rappers and a singer. I thought we were kind of a pop rap group. And I think other people saw themselves as more of a, they wanted to be more than that, lyricists and stuff like that. And for me, it was just, that was never what it was about for me. I liked making party songs and get people up to dance and pop. That was me. I was a pop rapper. And yeah, I think it was just creative differences. So we all went our different ways. And then after that, I did music for a little while on my own. And I was like, you know what? I don't love it the way I used to. And I was like, but I need another creative outlet. I've been playing games since I was about two with a Game Boy. So I was doing that from a young age. My dad owns a game shop. And I was watching a ton of IGN, which is an online website, a video game website. And I was like, these guys get paid to sit there and talk about video games. I can do that. Why? So I remember it very fondly. I had an iPod Touch. I got a piece of BluTac. I put the BluTac on my iPod Touch and I stuck it to the wall and I started talking. There was my first tripod.
Boom.
And I was just like, okay, cool, let's do it. If they can do it, why can't I? There's no reason for me not to be able to do it. So I was doing that for a little while.
I love what you just said right there. These people are doing it, so there's no reason why I can't do it. That's the attitude that I wish more people would take. I just feel like so many people make excuses for things, reasons not to get started. I mean, with this podcast itself, literally, I was looking at, I listen to podcasts myself all the time. And I was like, oh, why don't I have a podcast?
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's a space for the kind of conversations that I want to have and talking to a big range of different guests. I have my own unique way of talking, my own unique perspective on different topics. Yep. So if these other people can do it, there's no special hidden gift or talent that they have that I don't. I mean, I'm a rapper already. I'm used to being on a microphone. So why not? So yeah, literally a few days ago, I just started this. And yeah, we're getting deep into it already.
Yeah, what I find funny is I always say this to people, especially in the video game industry, is like people like to put their hot takes out there in a tweet. I'm like, why did you not save that for a YouTube video or a podcast? And don't get me wrong, you can still do your tweets, but you can elaborate on it so much further in a podcast. Sure. And that was sort of my thing. Was I started a podcast called My Xbox and Me. We're at 178 episodes, never missed a week.
Good
because
man.
Consistency is key in this podcasting game. It really, really is. People need to know that whenever this drops, I think it's a Monday this drops, right? Monday and Friday?
Monday and Friday, yeah.
There you go. Every Monday and Friday, you are getting a new podcast. For me, it's every Friday for My Xbox and Me. And then you just start creating this community, which is outside of your norm. Mm. And it's really, really interesting. But back to people making excuses. Oh my God, dude, it frustrates me so much because I haven't got the best microphone. I don't have the best camera. I don't have the best this. It's like I literally started with an iPod Touch and a piece of BluTac. Simple yeah. as that. There's no reason for people to not do it anymore. Most of us have iPhones. Doesn't matter if what number you've got. The camera's good enough. That's the mic true. Is good enough. Start. There's no excuses anymore for anyone.
No. Well, people always manage to find a way for excuses. Sure. That's a whole nother conversation, which is interesting. I mean, the way I look at it is when people say they don't have time for something or they're making any similar excuses to that, my interpretation is it's not a priority to me.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really the interpretation. I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I've never said I don't have time for something, but if I say I don't have time for something, all I'm saying is it's not a priority to me right now.
Yep.
You know, it would be nice if people translated it for themselves and were a little bit more honest, but it's how it is. But at the end of the day, you got to throw your hat in the ring.
Yep.
To even have a chance, right? Not everyone is going to get 1 million, 10 million, 50 million subscribers or views or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Not every musician is going to sell 1 million records, but it's like, you know what? You try, you put in the effort and you will get somewhere. If you keep on going, you can even just outlast the competition and that'll put you ahead.
It's something I learned from you, if I'm being honest with you, which is interesting because I think I messaged you the other day saying how much you inspired me, especially with music, obviously starting on. I've taken everything I've learned from you going forward, which is you don't have to be the biggest. You don't have to have the biggest audience, but you definitely have to learn how to monetize the audience that you do have. And not in like a negative way, but it's just to learn business. I thought I knew a lot about business until you start watching the way certain people move and you're like, oh, and then start applying it to your aspects of life. Mm. It really, really is interesting. No, I don't have, I've got 3K subscribers on YouTube, about 3K on Twitter. Same goes for Twitch. Nothing huge, but I've learned and I'm very lucky because I use Patreon, but I've learned and learned how to monetize my audience of 40 to 50 to 60 people that then generate enough income for me to do what I do full time, which is amazing.
That is amazing. Something you just said there caught me is how much the current climate and the scale of social media and all that, how much it kind of messes up people's perception.
100%.
Like you just said, 3,000 people on YouTube, 3,000 people on Twitter. So not that many.
Nope.
Have you ever been in a room with 3,000 people? Do you know?
Yeah, Bournemouth Festival. Maybe okay. When I perform there and watch.
Okay, so
that's
so,
about it.
So think of actually what 3,000, that's bigger than most O2 academies. That's 100%. Like, I'm trying to think of a venue that's 3,000 people. Shepherd's Bush Empire. Have you ever been there? That's 2,500.
There you go.
Okay, so when you say 3,000 people, you need to actually remember what 3,000 people looks like.
Is.
You know what I mean? Like, because what always happens is people always play the comparison game. So you'll be looking at some big video game player who's got like 20 million subscribers.
PewDiePie's the biggest YouTuber out there, video games YouTuber out there.
Yeah, he's got like the entire UK's worth of people.
Yep.
Right? That's an unreal, that's not like some normal, that's ridiculous. That's like a crazy outlier. He's got a country of people.
Yes.
Following him, right? But if someone has got 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, I'm like, that's a lot of people, man.
Dude,
it is a lot of people. If they're engaged,
literally, my whole business plan when I started on Patreon was if I can get 1,000 people to give me $1 a month, $1,000 a month. Mm. Cool. That's my building block. Have I got there yet? No. But you learn about merchandise, you learn about ad revenue, you learn about sponsors streams, you learn about everything else. It's not about if you're listening to this right now, you've got 50 people, can you turn 10 of those into people that will support you?
Mm.
There you go. That's the question. And that's what I learned just watching the way you move, Sheldo moves, others, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But it's not about how many people you have. It's how many are actually care about the content. That's what I've learned, especially talking to different PR companies about getting video games early. It's like, oh, what's your reach? My reach is this. Okay, how much do people actually care about what you say? Mm. A large portion of my audience actually care. PewDiePie, for instance, love him to bits, don't get me wrong. He's got 20 million, let's say his 5 million views on a YouTube video. Mm-hmm. If he's promoting something, how many of them are actually going over? A larger majority than what I have, obviously, but engagement. It's all about engagement. And that's what people really have forgot. I know personally most of my fans. I've met up with them. Mm-hmm. I've hugged them, whatever. Shook hands. I have with one fan when we did EGX, which is a big gaming convention. I stayed in a room with them because my room got booked up. Do you think like I have a connection with these people beyond just it being a working fan relationship? I don't call people fans.
Yeah.
I call them supporters. That's just me. Yeah. You might be a fan of my work and you may call yourself a fan, but I don't do it like that. I know who Mr. Moody is. I know who Stuart Parker is. I know who Dan Only is. I can list so many people that support me on Patreon, Twitch, number of own t-shirts. It's just ridiculous. It's all about engagement. Really is.
I hear you 100%, bro. And at the end of the day, these are people, not just numbers.
Exactly. So
people get hooked up on the numbers. It's like, okay, I've only got 50 subscribers. It's like, you know what? With those 50, like if you know who they are, right? Each of those 50, that's like an individual with their own story, their own interests, their own friendship groups, whatever it is. If you can go deep rather than just trying to go wide, like ideally you want both.
Yeah, but of course.
If you can build some depth with those people, you can have, 500 people who are like hardcore. Any musician, I think any artist, no matter your genre, any person creating something, you'd rather have 500 people who like love you to death and nobody on earth even knows who you are versus have 5,000 people or 50,000 people who may have heard of you, sort of know who you are, but aren't really caring and certainly are not supporting in any tangible way.
Well, I just look at it this way, which is a case of look at your audience. It's like, how many people buy a CD? And then they buy a CD, then you're in Southampton again. Then they buy a t-shirt, then you're in Southampton again. Then they buy a hoodie. It's like, or you can just sell the one CD to the casualist fan sort of thing. It's like, I know which one I would rather, personally. Mm. I'd want the one that's coming back, knows me personally, has followed me on my journey through whatever it is, no matter how early or late you've got on the fan bandwagon or supporting, whatever you want to call it. I know which one I would rather. I would much rather the engaged person that wants to consume everything. The thing is, I do 5 videos a week, but I stream 5 hours a day.
Okay, gotcha.
So it's an interesting one. So I do three different podcasts. I do 2 other videos, which probably like opinion piece videos or reaction trailers to video games. And then I stream on Twitch, which is twitch.tv/MCFixer, for 5 hours on top of that. So there's so much MCFixer out there in the ether that I want the person that wants to get all of that, not just a part of it. If you do choose just the podcast, cool, that's not a problem. But it's really interesting how many people do want all of it.
Yeah, it's good to have multiple touch points with your audience.
100%.
Yeah, because each of these platforms offers something different. You can have a similar brand, but a different communication style on each one. Like the way I use Twitter, as I'm sure you know, is very different to the way I use Instagram, which is different to the way I use YouTube. Like they're all different. They're all different. If you just want the pure music, Facebook, Instagram, that tends to be pure music, a little bit of personal. If you want to see what's going on in my brain and you want to just take a microscope to it, then Twitter is where I do that. So, there's lots of different avenues for everybody. Okay, so let's take it back let's talk video games, man. Let's talk what your bread and butter is.
Let's do it. Yeah.
So you said you were gaming from the age of 2. Do you remember what the first game you played was?
Probably Tetris on the Game Boy.
Oh, classic. On the old original.
On the old Game Boy, the yellow. Do you remember the yellow Game Boy?
I do.
The big thick one. I remember, obviously, there's pictures of me as a kid, like with it. So I imagine it must have been my mum or dad's. And then I used to play it. And then from there, we went on to the next console I remember would have been the Mega Drive.
Okay.
Streets of Rage, which is one of those games that stick in my head so fondly. Like, literally, I used to travel everywhere with that cartridge. No matter where I went, it was like, let's play Streets of Rage. Let's play Streets of Rage.
Do you know Do you know the funniest thing about that game in hindsight? Do you remember how you used to get your energy back?
So you used to eat meat, right? The apples and you had the chicken.
Yeah, so you'd pick up a barrel and there would just be like a roast chicken underneath.
Exactly.
I don't know what made me think of that a few weeks ago, and I was just cracking up to myself of the notion of you're out there fighting all these gangs, and then you pick up a barrel and there's just like a fresh roast chicken underneath, and you just eat it quickly.
Well, it's just like, look, I'm hungry, man. I've got to eat. Like, someone's got to feed me out here. Oh, look, there's some there. Or it's the, when you knock over a trash can, it comes out of that. You're like, huh, pretty sure that's not right, but it looks good to me, so I'll eat it. Why not?
And it brings back your energy. So, yeah, it would be great if that worked in real life. Every time you get an injury, you just go in a bin.
The cat was there, you know, that'd do. Why not?
Fresh
Mega Drive was probably the one that I remember most from my childhood. What did we have? We had Aladdin was on there. That game I remember being so goddamn hard. That there was this Bejeweled game, Golden Axe, Shinobi.
Wow. Oh, Golden Axe and Shinobi were classics.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. That's what I started on. That's where I really started. And I didn't know that I loved video games then. That was just a case of, I was like any other kid. I wanted to play video games. Then obviously you move on to the PS1 era. I remember getting my PS1 at Christmas. And I remember saying to my friends, oh, I've got a PS1. It's like, oh, what games did you get? I was like, what? I didn't get any games. I just had demo discs. Because back then, demo discs were the big thing. So you had like 10 games on a demo disc. And what you've got to remember is they were like half an hour to an hour of the game. Mm. And I never, as a kid, you don't really beat things. You realize that you're just playing it at the same thing over and over and over again. You don't really beat games back then. Or I didn't even know what saving was. I don't think I didn't have a memory card at the time either. Like, so I remember doing that for a while. And then I got ISS Soccer. And I remember playing, I remember having Final Fantasy VII, which was a big deal. But I'm dyslexic, so reading, not my strong point, even though I talk for a living, which is really strange. That's kind of my gimmick at the moment. Like, I a lot of Japanese names in the gaming industry, obviously. And I go to read it, I'm like, I'm about to butcher this, I'm really sorry. And just sort of go for it, you hit and miss sometimes. Yeah. But Final Fantasy VII was one of those games that I was like, this is really cool, but I can't play it because I can't read. Or I'm not a strong reader, so I don't know what I'm meant to do. Now I go back and play it. I'm like, oh, that's what was going on. Oh, that was what was going on. But the game that the series that I really fell in love with, and I realized that video games were going to be a huge part of my life, was Resident Evil 2. I played Resident Evil 1. My granddad was a huge, huge Resident Evil fanatic. So it was my uncles. And I was like, okay, cool. This seems cool. Watched him play it a few times, played Resident Evil 2. And there's a moment in Resident Evil 2 where Resident Evil 2 has this thing called the zapping system, which means that when you play the game, it impacts, there's two discs. So one will impact the other and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So there's this moment you go into this locked cupboard where there's a machine gun and a backpack. And I was like, okay, cool. So you pick up one of them. You're like, I've got both these things. I'm about to take them. It comes up. Maybe you should leave one for Claire. And I'm like, I ain't leaving nothing for Claire. Forget her. That's my business. I need this. Yeah. Then I get through the second game, get to that point, and there's nothing in there. And that the light bulb went off in my head, dude, where I was like, oh my God, this is a game, yes, but this is so much more. That impacted this and this impacted that and this happened because of this, and my mind was just absolutely blown at that moment. I was like, damn, video games, they're really cool.
Okay, so what are your what would you say are your top, what are your top five games, if that's too
from nostalgia, from nostalgia or from a critical standpoint?
Just your personal favorites.
Resident Evil 2, number one. I'd probably put Streets of Rage 2 up there due to the fact that, like I say, I have such great nostalgia for that. GTA 5 is up there, definitely at number three, I would say. Probably not in this order if I had to really think about it. Last of Us on the PS3 when that dropped. That game is one of the greatest storytelling games out there. Oh, and then where are we at? Five. Oh, it's a good question. Damn. Mm. What's a game I go back to every year? That's really hard. Five would be really, really hard. Four, easy. Those are definitely up there. Five, I'd really have to sit down and really think about, I guess. Okay. But those games, GTA 5 is one of those video games that on the surface level, you're like, oh, it's just another GTA game. But then you realize what they've done with how they've built that world and how you could switch to different characters at any moment. And they are doing stuff. It's not like Trevor's in his house one moment, you step over to Michael, then you come back to Trevor and Trevor's now in a ditch, half drunk, and you carry on playing as him half drunk. You're like, what? Like, the game is a living, breathing world that is just ridiculous. It's amazing.
Rockstar smashed it with that one.
100%.
Yeah. I'm thinking about the first gaming console we had. Well, I had. Maybe there was one before I was born.
Yeah.
I remember the Atari 2600. That was the
before first my time, but yeah.
Yeah, that was the first console that so I remember that with River Raid and Pac-Man.
Yep.
And yeah, some of those really old games. And then I remember we had an Apple IIe computer.
Okay.
So we had used to get the games on the big floppy disks.
Yeah.
Big floppy disks which you'd put in. Sometimes they'd mess up and you'd have to like blow the cartridges and move the thing. I remember that. Then I went through the first several consoles we had. I was just on the Nintendo chain. So
see, I wasn't a Nintendo kid. So yeah, I missed out on Mario and Zelda and all of that. I missed it all.
Yeah, I had every Nintendo console up until the GameCube. So
okay.
Yeah, so I had the NES and then the Super Nintendo.
Yep.
Nintendo 64. I remember the first time I played
64 was the one I got.
Oh my goodness. The first time I played, I remember the first time I saw Super Mario 64. I saw it in a
ridiculous.
I saw it in an airport, like in a display thing in one of the stores. And just that, the jump from 2D to 3D, like proper 3D as well. I must have been around 10-ish, I guess, when it came out. And I was just standing there. I was in the airport by myself because I used to travel unaccompanied because I was I was in boarding school.
Yeah.
I was flying by myself from like age 11. So maybe I was 11 or 12 more like. And I remember just standing there. Just in awe. Just awe. And then I remember I was living in Saudi Arabia at the time. And when I got back, one of my friends had, I remember the first person in the neighborhood who had a Nintendo 64. Yeah. And we used to just go there just to like watch him play it. It only launched with two games. It launched with Mario 64 and Pilot Wings, I remember.
Yep, that's correct. Pilot Wings.
And both of them were only one player.
Yep.
So like we just
wait. For this console that is made for four players, they launched with two games. It's like, wow.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Not even two player games.
No.
I just remember sitting there but I was happy just watching. Watch I was it. Just yeah. It was amazing. In my personal opinion, I still think that was the biggest jump between consoles. I think that was the biggest jump for me. Like the Super Nintendo,
the
Nintendo 64. That jump, it was unbelievable because you jumped a dimension.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Super Nintendo had much better graphics than the NES, but everything was still 2D. The sound was better, the graphics were better, but that jump from 3D, I mean, after that you had the GameCube, you had the Wii and all that.
Yeah.
And the jump was, you know, much smaller. Even now, I mean,
we've gone from I get what you mean by from 2D to 3D. The first time you see 3D, you're like, this is ridiculous. Obviously, it's nice. I've got a 4K TV now and I get to see games in 4K. And I'm like, and you see the difference and people are still not there yet.
Yeah.
But when you finally sit down and play games in 4K, there is a jump, but it's not the same way that you're talking about. And that's the funny thing about the new consoles when they finally come. It's like, wow, what's going to happen? Like when the PS5 and the Xbox Anaconda launches, we're looking at 2020, it looks like.
Oh, is that what it's called, the Anaconda?
They haven't actually named it. We know the PS5 will be the PS5, the code name for Xbox 2, which we don't know. Again, it's at Xbox 2, we've got Xbox Scarlet, we've got Anaconda. Okay. There's a lot of names out there in the ether right now. So we'll figure out. Anaconda's just a weird code name. I'm guessing it's like a play on that they're going to try and destroy a PlayStation, but whatever. We're like, what is the jump going to be? I've got an Xbox One X, so I can already play games in 4K.
Yeah.
So it's going to probably be 4K 60fps. And it's like, it's interesting. We're in a really interesting place right now in the video game industry, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I think with most things, you get diminishing returns.
100%.
So the closer, let's talk like, you know, if you just want to talk graphics, the closer you get to realistic photorealism, the less room for improvement there is. So you can already look at a top tier PC or Xbox One X or PS4 game.
Pro.
Yeah. And, you know, you're already seeing the pores on people's skin and sweat dripping. And,
Red Dead Redemption 2, you've got the horse testicles now that are growing, and they're bigger and smaller, depending on the weather. It's just like, okay, yeah, we're at this point now where it's like, we're interested. Yeah. It's the little things now, though. It's not so much the photorealism anymore, I feel like. It's now we're talking about things like VR and different ways to play games, which is the interesting thing. That's where the real jump will be, I feel like. Yeah. It's not going to be in graphics anymore. It's now coming down to like services. Like Xbox has got Xbox Game Pass. We got streaming games coming soon. So someone who's more a casual gamer won't have to buy an Xbox anymore, or a PlayStation, or a Nintendo Switch. Don't know about Nintendo. Yeah, we'll see. They're weird. It's a really interesting place. Like I say, streaming video games is going to be the new thing in. Like, you can stream it to your phone, into your smart TV. Just really, really interesting. Yeah, it is. But I agree with you, though. It's that jump. We're at that photorealism where you're like, it's so small now. Like I say, from 4K, where are we at? 8K is the next thing, I believe, that we're going to get to. But people haven't even got to 4K yet. No. So that's not going to be for another 10 years, maybe? Who knows?
And you're still limited by the human eye.
Exactly. I mean,
if you've got a phone with a, you know, I think there's a couple of smartphones that have 4K screens, and it's like, you literally, the human eye cannot detect on a screen that small.
Bigger screens, it makes more sense.
If you blow it up to cinema size, IMAX size, it's like, okay, maybe I can see 8K. Yeah. But on a standard monitor, the difference between, I mean, to be honest with you, the difference between 1080p and 4K, it needs to be a pretty big screen.
It's huge for me. I've got a 55-inch. I've got a 55-inch OLED, and I wish I got the 65-inch. Not that I can't see the difference. I can. It looks fantastic. We just went and saw Aquaman last week, and I was sitting. I'm not a DC guy. I'm a Marvel guy. Okay. But it was one of the few DC films that I was like, oh, this actually has a good start, has a good end, a little bit boring in the middle, but, you know, it's cool, it's fine. But we watched the trailer on our 4K TV. That was the first thing we did, because that was the first thing that popped up on YouTube. And I was like, all right, let's see it. And we saw it and was like, wow, this looks amazing. Then we went to the cinema and saw it and was like, looks better on our TV. I don't know what you're talking about. Which it didn't, of course, but it's just, anything that's small, I don't think it works for. It's big. 55, I'd say, is the minimum. Yeah. That you can really see the detail. But yeah, it is. It's strange.
I think virtual reality is a really interesting thing. It's interesting how it's made a comeback. I mean, I don't know. I think I'm a little bit older than you, so I don't know if you'd remember, but there was a time, I want to say in the 90s, when VR was supposed to become a thing, the technology wasn't there yet.
Nintendo had the Virtual Boy. And that was a huge flop.
Yeah, it just gave you a headache. Flop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Have you ever played one?
What, the Virtual Boy?
Yeah.
No, I'm too young. I was born in 92, so it passed me by, unfortunately.
No, it would give you a headache. One of my friends had one, and it wasn't fun. And another thing, no one can watch you play because it had the headset.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It had the headset. So
yeah.
On a Game Boy even, you know, you could have a mate looking over your shoulder watching what you're doing on Tetris. But one of the downsides, with the Virtual Boy, you had to be in a really weird position to use it because it had this sort of stand and you put your head on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then everything was just red.
Yeah. I know what you're saying, though. VR is an interesting one. Yeah, it has come back. I've played every VR headset there is at the moment. So Gear, PlayStation VR, HTC Vive, which was my favorite by far. I like it. I don't love it. It's one of those things where I do think eventually it will become the new norm. I do. Okay. If you've seen Ready Player One, I feel like that's where we're going right now with technology. Like, because there's going to need to be steps. We're going to get away from a controller. We really are. Will it be exactly that? I don't think so, because people don't like physical exertion when we're playing video games. Like I, for one, I've just got back to the gym. I hate it. But it's one of those things where VR right now is there's not a killer app. People are saying Beat Saber right now is the killer app, which is the Star Wars rhythm game type thing. So you've probably seen there's videos out there of people doing it.
I actually haven't seen it yet.
Okay, so it's like, imagine that you've got lightsabers. Mm-hmm. And there's a song playing and you have to just hit these big blocks that are coming at you in time of rhythm. And apparently it's amazing. I've not had a chance to play it myself.
So it's like lightsaber Guitar Hero.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it is. Okay. Exactly that. But people were saying it's really good. They love it. And it's very, they can't play it for long periods of time because it's tiring. People are not used to standing or sitting, but having their arms up and doing this for 20, 30, 40, an hour. Greg Miller, a guy who works for Kind of Funny, co-founder, he says he does it in the morning for his morning workout every day. Because it's that he comes out pouring with sweat. And that's where I think the there's a great benefit and a great turnoff. That's the problem I feel like you've got is, in some ways, VR can do amazing things. There's games like Moss out there that tell beautiful stories and it puts you in place of the character. You are the player in that way.
What's that one called?
Moss. Moss is, I think you're guiding this mouse through. It's like a puzzle game, I believe.
Okay.
Heard amazing things about that. There's a couple other games like Firewall out there, which is on the PSVR. It's a shooter, but you actually feel like you're in the game because you're leaning around corners. It's everything you do on the controller that I can put myself in the position of this and that's how I play games, but you're actually doing it. You're actually leaning. And there are cool aspects to it. Do I think it, the only way I think it catches on is when we get rid of wires. I feel like the wires are the big problem right now. No one has done a high quality wireless headset. Obviously you've got the weird ones that you put your phones in and stuff like that, but not to the level of what we need yet. There's not a killer app that really says, Fixer, you need to go get this. Like Resident Evil was on it, and I'm a huge Resident Evil fan, but even still, I was like, I don't want to play a whole intensive horror game. Like I'm talking 20, 30 hours in VR with this headset. And like you said, I like to let my fiance watch me play games. I don't want to sit there with this big thing on, but she can still watch because she can see the screen, but I've got this on and I'm sort of away from her. And I don't like the thought, even when I've got headphones on all the time, I'm sort of like looking around the whole time. Even when I stream, I hear something, I'm like, what? Like, if you ever watch me live, people are like, are you all right? Do you have a ghost in your house? I'm like, I'm just a nervous wreck because I can't hear what's going on in the outside world. But yeah, it is interesting. It is good technology, some of it. And then some of it, there's some crap games out there as well, unfortunately. But it's just one of those things.
Video games are really interesting because I barely play them.
You haven't got time?
No, I love video games. But I barely ever... I haven't turned my Xbox on this year.
Damn.
No, oh, wait, we're in 2019.
It's 2019, okay. So 2 years.
That's not that impressive. I haven't turned it on since, I want to say, early 2018.
Fair enough.
Or
why? Like, why?
Why? To be honest, I feel guilty. Like, this is my personality. No, like, if I'm not being productive, like, it's different with you because it's part of your work, right?
Interesting.
So if you're streaming... You can say that's, you know, that's part of...
Oh, it's my job.
Yeah, it's part of what you do. Exactly.
Yeah, 100%.
If I'm gaming, I'm like thinking of... This is literally my personality type because I'm super duper high in what they call industriousness, which is like a personality trait. So if I'm not doing something productive, I feel personal guilt. And so if I'm gaming, especially for any particular like decent amount of time, I just thought, I'm just like, oh, I'm thinking of all the other things I could or should be doing. And so...
So you feel like it's a waste of your time, really, that you're playing video games instead of maybe working on your business or something else.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like if I had more time, like video games would take priority for me over watching movies. Certainly, I don't even own a TV.
Yeah.
Over watching TV, anything like that. But yeah, I always get this. Last game I played through was Wolfenstein 2. That was last game I played through.
Yeah.
That was dope. That was a really good game.
Yeah, good game.
And and there's certain types of games I just avoid now. So RPGs, anything like anything like Fallout.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm not even going to look at it because I don't have 100 hours to sink.
Yeah, no, 100. Literally, that's...
To sink into one of these games, I just can't justify it right now.
It's the gift and the curse of my job, which is video games are my hobby, but now video games are my job. Yeah. So you have your moments where you're like on a Saturday. Saturday's probably the only day I don't play video games. Because that's the time I spend with my fiance. And even sometimes she's like, oh, should we play a game? And I'm like, no, anything but. Let's go and do anything but play a game today. Mm. Which is, it's one of those things where it's just like, I play it every single day. But it's in different ways. When you stream, you're not playing a game the same way you would when you're at home and just sat back. I'm in this chair right here in my corner with these with big lights on and high energy all the time, and you've got to be entertaining. You're looking at your chat, and that's not how video games are meant to be played.
Yeah,
it's a case of Now I've changed my schedule. So in the mornings, I've got more time to do emails and admin stuff, which, you know, is running your own business. Oh my goodness. There's way more admin stuff than I was even prepared for ever.
Always, but, always.
I still sneak in a couple of hours now on the big TV, which is lovely. But yeah, so many people say it to me, oh, I would play video games, but I just don't have time. Everyone has their thing that they like to do. I don't like partying anymore. Ever since I've been settled down, I've been with my missus for 8 years. It's like, I have no reason ever to go to a club again. Like, there's just no reason for it. Yeah. Like, the only reason I'm going to go to a club is to get myself in trouble.
We're men. Men, I don't know if women actually know this, but men don't go to nightclubs for music and dancing.
That's what I tried to, my fiance said, should we go out of clubs? And I was like, no, I'm not in there for that reason at all.
Literally. At all. Like, if you're in a serious relationship, the motive to go to a nightclub is just gone. Deaded.
God, there's no reason. There's literally no reason. So yeah, so my thing is video games. Like, you're in the gym all the time as well. I'm sure you're still working out a lot. A
couple hours a week, man. It doesn't take as long as people seem to think.
I'm
still on it.
Think about all the people that the couple hours you're in there, you could be playing video games. You choose not to.
Yeah, but my choice is like clearly a better one.
No, but look. Everyone's entitled to opinions. Yeah. Your opinion could be wrong.
I'm sold. I'm right on that one. Like, if it's a toss up between what's good for you and one is playing video games and one is going to the gym, this isn't a cuss to video games. I'm just I don't think that's a fair competition right there.
I mean, to you, but then to some people that have.
If you make money, if you're making money by playing.
But even if not, what about if you have no social skills at all, and the only time of the day is the time you get on video games and you meet up with your friends, and that is the only time you get to socialize because you're an introvert, and that isn't what you want to do. You don't want to be out in the real world. You'd rather be home playing Rainbow Six Siege with your friends, which is somewhere in America, somewhere in wherever. Like, I get it, what you're saying. I totally get that gym is better for your health.
This might be controversial to some, but I would say that's the exact kind of person who needs to put the controller down and get out of the house. You're going to have to interact with people in the real world, man.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't mean you. I know you can.
No.
I met you in the real world. If someone is scared of the real world and making friends in the real world and it's all online,
no.
I personally think that's a dangerous situation.
Don't misconstrue what I'm saying. I'm saying there's a difference between someone that doesn't want to and, like, if you don't want to, what's wrong with not wanting to when you've already got friends? I just put out a podcast last week with me and my fiance called Fixing Friends, which the title of it is Fix Has No Friends. Okay. Like, generally, I have lost all my IRL friends because of building my business.
I've never heard the term. Yeah. I know what it means. I was just like, whoa, is that like gamer terminology right there?
I don't think it's gamer. I think it's just internet terminology. Yeah. But yeah, my best friend now is a guy called Kresh who lives in New York. I've never physically met him. I talk to him about everything I would a best friend. Literally, you name it, we talk about it. My ups, my downs, my highs, my lows, whatever it is. I don't think that makes me anything wrong with me because I choose to socialize that way other than socializing by meeting you for a drink.
Okay.
Like, there's no difference to that in my opinion.
Oh, that's fair enough, man. I respect different opinions. I respectfully would disagree for various reasons, but that's a whole podcast in itself right there. So
maybe we'll do it one day.
Yeah, we can save that one. I think I'm quite concerned about the virtual online world replacing reality for some people. Which it does. I'm not saying
for me it's not that, but yeah.
No. I know with you that's not the case. Like, I'm not talking about you particular. I think if someone loses the ability to talk and conversate and make friends in real life, I don't think that bodes well. I don't think that bodes well for quite a few different reasons.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you can do both, then that's fine. It's not saying don't play video games or don't chat to people online. I mean, people do that with social media in itself. But just like if you're only on Twitter or only on Facebook and all your vast majority of your social interaction is on there, rather than in real life, I think I don't think that's a good thing. I don't think it's good for people's long-term mental health either. I think it's actually quite connected to why you're getting a rise in loneliness and depression and anxiety and all that stuff. I do think it's connected. I think human beings, we don't evolve that quickly. So I think human beings are it's only in the last 10 years that people have started socializing all these ways. And I don't think we really know what the whole long-term effect of it might be.
It's so new. All this social media, online personalities. That's I get called an influencer nowadays. I'm like, what the hell does that mean? Well, you influence people's decisions on what to purchase. I'm like, what? I just play video games. What are you talking about? I agree with you, but yeah, it's definitely a conversation worth having one day. Definitely.
Yeah, it is, man. I think it's important. I think it's one of those ones that it's a new topic, right? It's not one of those things that you had to really think about too much in the past. But I think that, in the last 10 years, there's been a big shift. Maybe I say it because as someone who goes out there all the time and is always interacting with people in public, I can tell people who do not normally interact with people in public.
I think there's definitely a good balance between the two, right?
So I say if you, as long as you are able to maintain the real world interactions and stuff, I think that's fine. And I think most people who are a little bit older, I worry about it less with people who are, say, 25 and over, because they've generally had that period where there was a time before everything was social media online. But for people who are just kind of growing up in that, I do think there's a danger of that becoming reality. And then reality is like, oh, I don't even know like what to do here. Like, I can't look someone in the eye and have a conversation or emote properly or feel just, I don't know. I'm a face-to-face guy as much as can be, because I think you lose a lot in communication if you don't have that ability to see someone and respond to them and all that.
Yeah, I think in my industry, especially like I said, with my fans, is having that connection again, like I'm saying. A lot of these people, or a lot of people I know, are introverts, do stay indoors a lot. But when we go to EGX, they know that they can come meet me and see me, and we're all together. Yeah. So they do have that as well as.
That's
not
good.
Just a case of one or the other. But I think a lot of people, or a lot of people that I've come across anyway, they need time to get used to certain types of people and certain people before they're willing to just put themselves out there. Me, I just put myself out there.
Sure.
I've done it for all my life, so it's easy. Yeah. It comes easier for me. So
yeah. Well, let's put it simply. I think people should face challenges. In fact, I would even say the same as to say someone, you've got somebody who is, this is generally going to be an older person, but say you've got someone who's a complete technophobe, scared to use the computer, scared to be on. I'd say that someone like that, I'd actually encourage them to use it
and
become at least somewhat comfortable with it. Cause you know, it's like overcoming a challenge. It's like someone who's never been to the gym before.
Yeah.
The first concern of them isn't necessarily going to be what exercise do I do or how many reps or whatever. It's like, no, it's just like, you're just scared of the environment.
Get in there.
it's like you're in the environment and you're freaked out because you're like, whoa, this is weird. You've just got all these people running around, sweating, lifting stuff. It's noisy. Like, I can understand how someone who's not used to it could be like, whoa, this is too much. But I would encourage them to, you know what, go there, do it. Put yourself in that weird situation. Put yourself out your comfort zone, and then eventually, you know, it'll come into your comfort zone.
Exactly.
I think as you grow, as you get older, as you mature, you want to be expanding your comfort zone all the time so you can be in different situations and you're like, you know what, this is cool. I'm comfortable. I'm not freaking out. This is normal. So that's my personal thought. But, you know, my opinions are always just my opinions. I don't know.
I'm straight.
I don't try to enforce them on the world from the top down or anything like that.
Yeah,
man. So what are you excited about at the moment in the gaming world?
Oh, man, we got coming up. We've got Division 2 coming, which is a new Ubisoft game, which is going to be, can't wait, third person. If you ever played like Destiny, it's similar to that in that vein. A loot grinder, which, again, that's what a lot of these games and services are nowadays. Mm. It's, you know, everything you hate about video games, never play one of these, Ruby, let me tell you, bro.
Oh, yeah?
It is hours upon hours. It's to this point where you're grinding up to level 200, and then we get there, and then every point beyond that is like 5 hours to get level 201. Like, it's that bad. But those are the games from a streamer's point of view.
Uh-huh.
I love it because there's the stories there. But take away the actual video game, it's I'm going from here to here, and this is the journey we're going to take.
Mm.
In streaming, for me, it's great because I get to then bring other people in. Like, they say it is you. You're like, yo, dude, I want to get on. It's like, cool. What level are you? I'm this. All right, perfect. I can help you get to level 120 today. Let's do that. Bang. it's grinding your way through and helping other people get through. We've got Division, we've got Anthem, we've got Ori and the Will of the Wisp, which is a great little smaller title by Xbox, which looks amazing. The art style is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Outer Worlds, which is the ex-Fallout devs are making a Fallout type game. Bethesda's come under a lot of scrutiny at the moment with Fallout 76 not being good and being broken.
Yeah, people didn't seem to like that.
No, it's a big no-no at the moment. It went from it went from a full retail price game down to £20 in a matter of 2 weeks.
What did they do wrong? Because the previous ones seem to have smashed it. In fact, even Fallout Shelter on mobile smashed it.
Yeah, yeah. So Fallout 76, the problem is that it's an online game, but it's not an online game that everyone wanted. It's more a case of you go out into this world and you are remaking the world. The world's been nuked and that's your job. You're making bases and you're grinding out loot and stuff like that, which that sounds really fun, but there is too many bugs. Literally, we just did it on my Xbox and me, the news. There's another 150 bugs just got patched out last week. A game shouldn't be launching in such a bad state. People's saves were getting eaten. It was uninstalling the game itself. Texture issues. It was ridiculous. Like, the game shouldn't have launched in the state it is. If a game's going to launch in that state, launch in early access. That's why we have early access. Mm-hmm. People know what they're buying. But when you pay $60 or £50 for a full retail game, you expect the game to goddamn work. And this game didn't work. That's pretty much the start and finish of it all. So that's why I think a lot of people are excited for Outer Worlds. Single player, story driven, graphically looks amazing. And it is done by the old Fallout team. So a lot of people are really interested in that one. For me, Resident Evil 2 Remake comes out.
Oh, Remake.
This is like, dude, this is the biggest moment in my life. Generally, if you go to my YouTube channel, there's a video of me freaking out. It's me swearing for about 6 minutes straight, just literally jumping up and down. My fiance got shown at E3 and I'm just absolutely going crazy about it. Yeah. But it looks amazing. It's a full remake, not a remaster. Mm-hmm. So from the ground up. And I can't wait. That comes out in less than a week. So I'm just waiting for a review copy to come through. And I'm just like, literally before I come on here, I've just got my email open. I'm just sitting there like, please just turn up. Like, and really need it.
It's like a kid at Christmas.
Oh, Christmas sucks. This is the best.
I've never actually played a Resident Evil game, you know.
Matt, if you like horror, if you like survival horror, they're not long games at all. They're Metroidvania likes, meaning that you do a lot of backtracking on yourself. Like, there'll be a key here or a door here that has a certain key. You're like, okay, cool, I've got that key now, or I don't have that key, I've got to go find it again. A lot of backtracking and stuff like that. But that game to me is just everything. So I can't wait. I generally can't wait.
I never had a PlayStation.
Oh, okay.
I've never had any of the PlayStations, so I've missed. Yeah, I mean, loads of my friends had them growing up, so I played a PlayStation. I played tons of PlayStation games, but I've never Metal Gear Solid, Resident Evil, some of those games that, you know, were sort of like big PS exclusives. God of War, Last of Us.
Oh, God of War would be number five.
Yeah, what was the other one?
God of War would probably be number five on my all-time list right now.
What's that other one? Uncharted. You know, I've never played any of those games. I've never played any of those games. I've played, you know, the Xbox exclusive, your Halos, Gears of War, stuff like that, and all the Nintendo stuff. But yeah, like, PlayStation is the one that I think I've had the least exposure to.
I think PS4 is the best. I know you probably won't, but the PS4 is the best place to go for new exclusive. Horizon Zero Dawn, God of War, like you just said, the reboot is one of the best games I've played last year by a mile.
Yeah.
Like I said, Last of Us, and there's just so much on the PS4. You've got all those games. It's like, wow, it's amazing. It's an amazing time to be a gamer. Really is.
Okay. I was about to ask, actually, what do you think is the, do you think now is the best time for video games ever?
Yeah, or? By far.
Oh, okay.
By far. Okay. Not for me. Remember, I was born in the 90s, so I didn't really start really understanding the gaming industry till the 360 era. It was probably where I started to really figure it out. So I didn't. A lot of people say NES, like, they've got some fantastic games in that era, but that passed me by. I miss me.
Okay.
So
I get you.
Now for me, it's like, right, last year might be one of the best years ever that we had for gaming. It was just every game that dropped was an 8+. I mean, 8 in review plus. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, even if it's not your cup of tea, it was still a great game. Like, a game like Monster Hunter World, which is a JRPG type thing. For me, I played it for about 40 to 50 hours. It was fine. I didn't love it, but other people will say that's the best game ever. Like, literally, and there's just something out there for everyone. Yeah. And that is the best thing. It's so inclusive. Everyone can get what they want in this industry. And that's why I love it so much, if I'm honest.
That's dope, man. That's dope. I think for me personally, my favorite gaming era, well, there's two. Was my two favorite consoles were the Super Nintendo and the Nintendo 64.
Yeah, 64 has, like, got so many good memories.
Yeah, Nintendo 64 with flipping GoldenEye and Perfect Dark and Mario Kart and Diddy Kong Racing, WrestleMania. Do you know what it is with me? Do you know what appeals less to me in this modern gaming era?
Go on.
Is I like to be in the room with my friends playing. So I like the four-player split screen.
That's what Nintendo's bringing back, though, with the Switch, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I love the four-player split screen. Yeah, GoldenEye. Perfect. Like the
Mario Party. Oh,
yeah. For me, like, I've tried online gaming.
Yeah.
And for me, it misses the real world aspect.
Oh, yeah.
So it's one thing with me if I'm there. You know, I mean, even if I was playing against you, I'm playing against someone I personally know. I want to be in the same room. Like, I want to be able to, I don't know.
You want to be able to say, look, that's what I just did.
Yeah.
No, I got you, dude.
That was the thing. And I think the Nintendo 64 was the console that they had so many games that were tailored for local, four player local multiplayer. And so, yeah, for me, that was, there were so many games on that console that to this day, I'm just like, wow. Some of the adventure games as well, Banjo-Kazooie, Donkey Kong 64, mm-hmm. Mario, obviously. And then you had like F-Zero. There were so many games there. Smash Brothers, the original Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
So much fire on that. So much fire.
Yeah. Like, Nintendo's the interesting company out of the three of them because they're the only one that really pushes that. There are devs out there that still do four-player co-op games, and there are some great games out there. Couch co-op is still a thing, but it's not done in a AAA sense anymore. The first parties are not doing it. You get games more like from Rare, now you get Sea of Thieves, which is exactly what you're talking about. It has that feel online for me, but maybe not for someone like you. You would much rather all be pirates sat next to each other than all be pirates over online. So I totally get it.
Yeah. No, because when I used to game as a teenager, it was more of we'd all go to someone's house. We'd have some snacks and be mucking around. And then it's like...
But you know what I think it is? Kids have such a low attention span nowadays that I don't think kids, even Let's Plays are different because you're constantly engaged, right? Mm. You're watching something, but kids don't want to watch their other friends play games anymore. Literally. Mm. Like, if I can, I've got a nephew and he plays games. I'm like, oh, should we play together? And he's like, no. You just get your Switch out and then we can sit next to each other and play. But that's it. Like, he doesn't want to play just on his Switch. And I'm like, well, why don't we just play together on your way? He's like, no, I want my own. And I'm like, wow.
This is a little bit of what I was touching on earlier. Like, I find that a little concerning.
See, I don't find it concerning. I think it's just different. I generally do. I mean, I probably haven't thought about it as much as you because I'm always in it. But for me, I just like, okay, cool. It doesn't. I've got a Switch, so I just pull mine out of my bag and we play together. Like, it's no different to me. I guess he just wants the screen here.
I guess with me, I think of it on the scale of like wider culture and society. So when you're talking about lower attention span, or you're talking about people not wanting to share, you're talking about the me thing, which parallels to a lot of other things. Mm-hmm. I do sometimes worry that it's going, too much in this completely individualistic
direction. Yeah, that, I agree with you.
You see what I mean? So it's not like,
I'm part of the problem though.
Yeah.
Honestly, dude, like me and my fiance have both got Xboxes. Like, because I'm like, no, you need your own screen. I can't play co-op with you. She sat next to me. Like, generally, if I turn my camera right now, my setup is literally a double desk with a big TV on the wall. She has her own monitor. I have my own monitor. She's got her own mic. I've got my, like, literally, it's, I'm part of the problem. I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm not. I'm not going to.
No, that's all right. I just think it's interesting. It's one of those things I think about. You know, I might be... worrying more about it than is needed.
Maybe not.
But, you know, I don't know. Especially, like, you know, when we talk about something like virtual reality.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I do worry, like, okay, in 50 years, like, that's a lot can happen in 50 years.
Have you seen Ready Player One?
I haven't, no.
What? I know you haven't got... Watch Ready Player One. Okay. And this is literally what you're scared of is what happens in this. Literally.
Yeah.
Because everything goes away. Everyone has headsets on.
Yeah.
And they live in that world. They don't live in the real world anymore. That's Ready Player One.
Okay, because the thing is, a lot of stuff can seem unrealistic or far-fetched until it happens.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I think if 15 years ago, you told me that everyone was going to be walking around like staring a little black rectangle, like nonstop, and people would be getting hit by cars and falling off buildings because they're so obsessed with these things, or trying to take photos of themselves on these things, and I'd be like, what are you even talking about? Like, how can you be addicted to a phone? Like, phones didn't used to be something you really could get. it wasn't really an addictive thing.
But yeah.
It's like, wow, like smartphone addiction is you can't even deny that one. Like, that's very real.
Yeah.
So I do sometimes wonder, like, okay, if there's this technology where I can just, everybody just sits in their house and you can feel like you're going outside. You can feel like you're doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
Your body is physically just sitting there.
Dude. Let me be deadly serious with you for honest. So I've been doing this for 3 years. Yeah. And literally what you just described was me 100% for 3 years, sat on my chair, streaming, playing video games. And I sat up one day and my knees were killing me. I went, why the hell are my knees hurting from sitting down? Something had to change. So now I'm intermittent fasting. I'm trying ketos, which I'm sure other people have their own opinions on, but that's a whole different thing. But it's like, there has to be a balance.
There has
to be.
Yeah, I'm about health, man. Physical health, mental health. I think it's. I don't think you can understate its importance. So I do sometimes worry about, it's not hard to just spend a day just sitting in front of a screen and 9, 10, 12 hours go by and you're like, you know what? I haven't moved.
I have not moved. That's real. It's real. Yeah. It's really real. I'm not going to lie to you. It's real.
Yeah. So that is one of my concerns. As long as people stay healthy, then I don't really care. Yeah.
I think it comes to self-awareness. Yeah. I mean, I'm a big dude. You've met me. I'm a big dude. There's no two ways about it. I was putting the wrong stuff in my body while living that lifestyle. Mm. So even if I have to keep living that lifestyle, because that's my job, and I do have to sit there for 5-6 hours, that's my job, like any office job, then be self-aware enough to know that, yes, that means you do need to go to the gym for an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
And that means you do need to not get a bus to the gym, walk to the gym as well, because that's your damn warm-up. And it's just be self-aware. Like, 100%. Now I cut out all fizzies and I literally just drink water. Boom. Literally, that's it, done. Because I needed that, and amongst other things. But you've got to be self-aware.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm with you on that one. And I'm glad you said that, because I just think it's in everything. It's not just gaming.
It's
not just gaming. It's the same with an office job. Exact same thing with an office job. I'm always telling people, you know, you've got to make sure. I mean, it's mad. Like, people are, the average adult who works an office job, like the lack of general flexibility and fitness just from sitting, because your muscles get tight, your calves get tight, you're like, people can't even do people can't do a squat because your muscles are literally not flexible enough to get in the position. And that's not how it's meant to be. No, our ancestors would be frowning greatly upon us. That's dope, man. But yo, we're coming up to about an hour on the podcast. Have you got any, where can people find you?
Yeah, MC Fixer everywhere. Not Mook Fixer, not Mr. Fixer, not, it's just all just Fixer. But yep. MC, if you're finding me, MC Fixer, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, Instagram. I think I have a Snapchat, but Hayley runs that for me because I'm not 13 years old. I don't understand what they want. if you also Patreon.com/MCFixer, that's where I'm fully funded through that. So go check it out. Certain goodies over there that you can go get. Appreciate the time, though. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome, bro. Good to talk to you, man. Talk soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.